now call the special board meeting of the Franklin Township Community School Corporation School Board to order. Our first item of business tonight is to consider a joint resolution in opposition to bills harming our public schools. Dr. Hibbard.
Yeah, so the Teachers Association reached out to us, and many school districts and associations across the state have opposed House Bill 1005, which takes money away from the revenue stream to public schools and gives it to private schools. And we are asking that the board support our Teachers Association and accept this resolution, approve the resolution. So,
before we can have some discussion, can I entertain a motion and a second for the joint resolution?
I'll make a motion to accept the resolution. Second.
So moved, Ms. Downer. Second, Ms. Gowan. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 All opposed, same sign. Motion carries 4-0. Our next item up for business tonight is the first preliminary determination hearing. And this is for the board to hear a preliminary hearing on the proposed Kittley construction project. If you're in attendance tonight to speak at the hearing, please come to the front of the room at the beginning of the meeting. After the presentation by the administration and its advisors, there'll be an opportunity for the public to make comments about the project. At the hearing, we will ask that each person limit their comments to 3 minutes and that the topic be limited to the proposed projects under consideration. The notice of this preliminary determination hearing was published as legally required on February 26th, 2021 in the Indianapolis Star and in the Indianapolis Business Journal. At this time, I will ask Jane Herden, bond counsel, to explain the purpose of this hearing. Jane?
Good evening. Thank you very much. And pursuant to Indiana Code 6-1.1-20-3.5, a school corporation must hold 2 public hearings, and at the end of those 2 public hearings may consider a resolution to preliminarily determine to issue bonds or enter into lease for projects which have a total project cost of more than the threshold for non-controlled projects. This is the very beginning of the process. It establishes the maximum financial terms, and those terms can always come down if decided by the school board. Thank you.
Thank you, Jane. We will now hear from Chief Operating Officer Fred McWhorter about the process of determining and communicating the projects to the community and the need for the projects and how the proposed project meets the needs. Fred.
Thank you. Tyler, can you put the one PowerPoint up, please? Thank you. The purpose of communicating is one we've had previously. The board had a work session back in February, which we went through various options and reasons, and we're going to share a lot of that information here tonight. Another way is we're going to have a hearing tonight, and we're going to have another hearing a week from today and to give the community information on need for the project and the reasons why and give them opportunity to provide input. We also posted this on our website in addition to posting notices in the newspaper. And so we're here tonight to talk about Kittley Intermediate School. But not just Kittley Intermediate School, but really just the growth in the community in general, because that's the simple reason why are we considering an addition to that location. District enrollment data. As you've known, we've grown a lot of students in the last several years. We grew at our official ADM count day. In September, we were up 233 students. We were the only school corporation in Marion County to see an increase in enrollment this school year, especially when you consider COVID and everything else that's going on. Last year, we were up over 560. The year before that, over 200. The year before that, over 200. So we're just under 1,400 students over the past 4 years in growth, and we're continuing to grow. For those of you here, I have a map. Basically shows a map of Franklin Township, and all the black circled areas are where all the developments are that are going on in the community. We're tracking over 1,000 housing starts currently. And so demographic study that we have also shows our enrollment's going to continue to increase, and at least 200 kids a year. So they're coming. If you just drive around the township, you can see all the construction that's going on. As far as Kittley goes, also it's a needed facility improvements. When you look at our data from where the grade levels are, as you know, we redistrict and actually regrade configured last year. So we went back to an intermediate model where now we have K-3 buildings, 2-4-6 buildings, then the junior high and the high school. Well, under our old model, we had several buildings that were in the red or at approaching capacity. And so that's one of the reasons why we reconfigured. So that basically left our, if you go to the next slide, Tyler. One more. When we redistrict, it put all our, if you look onto the current enrollment slide, all the elementaries back into the green within the 80s percentiles of capacity. But it left our two intermediate schools in the yellow at 93 and 94, I believe. 95 and 93% capacity. Middle school east, or formerly middle school east, now the junior high, this year is really at 106% capacity. People really haven't seen that because we've been on this hybrid schedule. When construction's completed here this August, so thankfully it'll be done hopefully by the beginning of the school year, then that capacity will go back into the green in around the 85% level. Then the high school's currently, people think it's over capacity, but it really still has some room still left. The issue with the high school is it's just an aging facility where the center core of it's approaching 50 years old. So we've done things to address enrollment growth, but it still left the two intermediate schools. And so we chose Kittley, if you go back to the second slide, we chose Kittley so that we would have, versus say Edgewood, is the growth is occurring at Kittley versus Edgewood. And that building's an older facility, so it made sense to make the addition there and also address some of the HVAC and older needs of that facility, as opposed to at Edgewood first at a newer facility that didn't need as much maintenance. One more back, Tyler. Sorry. So this project will essentially bring the capacity up to 1,500. So overall, as a district, we're trying to get to 1,000 kids per grade level. So 1,000 kindergartners, first, second, third, fourth, fifth, and so on. So we're just at that capacity at the elementary level. This project will help us get us there. We're currently about 1,300 at each elementary or at each intermediate school. We need to get them both up to 1,500 so that we have 3,000, so we can handle the 3,000 students at the 4, 5, and 6th grade level. The junior high is under that, but once the construction's done, it'll be that. That's the reason why we're sizing it to that size. There'll be no increase in residential tax bill due to this project, and we'll get into that later as far as the financing go. We have debt falling off. We also have the tax caps in the community that most people are already at already. Which is limited to 1%. So the tax rate won't change or won't go up. In fact, it'll probably decrease, actually. The proposed debt is under the tax cap. We're looking at hard construction cost about $14.3 million, and we have total project cost about $17.4 when you include soft costs such as equipment and the architects and construction managers and the technology and furniture and all that kind of stuff. And we'll use existing cash on hand, similar to the junior high project, to front cash flow the project. We'll do a reimbursement resolution so that we can issue bonds and reimburse ourselves to limit to reduce capitalized interest cost as well. Just for historical information, got some enrollment data. Again, up 233 kids this current school year in September. Now, after the first year, we had a second ADM count February 1st, and that we're now up 309 students. So even though that's 233, we're really up 309 now that we've in the second semester. So next year, when you roll up people grade level, we know we're going to be at least 312 up compared to last year. And that's just assuming no growth. That's assuming just moving kids up a grade level and that kindergarten enrollment is the same as what it is this year. It could be higher if we have growth due to construction that I mentioned earlier. So then being conservative, showing 2.5% growth in 22 and 23, that's an extra 260 kids the next couple years after that. So, Tyler, next slide, please. Again, we kind of went over this slide earlier. Intermediates in yellow, junior high in the red. That junior high will be corrected. The next slide is when we move everybody up a grade level. Keeps elementary in the green. We actually have a bubble moving through at Edgewood. So even though that says, 79%? 89%? It's not quite to 90, but it very well could be at 90 once if we have, that's just assuming we move kids up. It doesn't include any growth. But you can see we're projecting Kittley to be at 97% capacity. Again, that could actually be higher if we have more growth than anticipated. And then you see the high school creeping into the 91% capacity. So we're seeing growth at the secondary level. And that makes sense because a lot of the houses that are being built are not necessarily starter homes. They're the $250,000 houses and up, which typically older, not starter families, but older people who already have kids, older kids are in those homes. And so that's why we're seeing that kind of growth. Next slide, please. So as far as the project itself goes, in order to bring the project from this current 1,200 up to 15, we need to add some classrooms. But in that, we also need to consider, and we met with the principal, and she got feedback from her staff on what other needs that they have in the building. Because if you go to the next slide, they also have performing arts and other specialized classes, not just regular classrooms that they have to deal with. So this picture is the existing facility. You have the kind of the X's, the academic wings. You have in the center here the media center, and you have performing arts and offices. You have the gym. You have the cafetorium, which is the auditorium and cafeteria space, and then you have the kitchen area. So the proposal, if you go to the next slide, is to do this addition to connect the two academic wings. From the north and south on the east side of the building. So even though there's 16 classrooms right here, it's a net add of 12 classrooms because we have to tear down a couple on the end here in order to make this connection. But what it does is it adds these 12 classrooms and adds another PE space and it adds another cafeteria space, and it turns the existing cafetorium into a performing arts area. If you go to the next slide. This is an outdoor rendering. It essentially puts a flat roof, which is a little cheaper to install and maintain, but from the outside it still looks like a slanted roof. Next slide. This is another, just a picture to kind of show where the addition is, where the classroom additions. It also, if you notice on the east side here, currently we have two exits, one to the north and south of on the east side. This will add a third one to the busing area over here, so that'll help with bus flow traffic. It also provides a way from people to get from the north side academic wing to the south side academic wing. Everybody used to have to flow through to the center and come back. Now there'll be another way around also. It also provides a center core area to where they can go right back into the main area without having to go around the horn to get there. Again, this shows the gym off the back here and then the cafeteria off the back, which can also be accessed through from the outside as opposed to having to go through the building to get to. Next slide. Kind of a construction schedule. We'd like this to happen overnight, but it just doesn't happen that way. We're back here in early 21, here in March, having these hearings. Assuming everything goes through the process, we'll go through the process in the next couple months. Architects will start designing the details of this addition. We will let bids towards the later part of the year, assuming everything gets approved, that towards October, November, or I'm sorry, September, October, and then start construction here in the summer of 22. Then it'll take until about July, of 23 so that we can open in August of 23. So it'll be ready for the 23-24 school year. So it'll be about 2 years of construction. We have to phase and plan on how we stage areas, because as we're doing construction, we need to make sure the students are safe and that we don't interact and such as that. Next slide. This is a breakdown cost, hard cost of the classroom additions, activity addition, renovation part. It's $13 million. Alternates of roofing and the road bypass around the south. You know, there's a road that goes all the way around the building. We need to make that south part of the road a little bit wider and so it's easier to get around. With COVID and a lot more people taking their kids to school themselves, we've noticed a lot of areas where we need to improve traffic flow. This is a way to do that. And then so that's really adds up to $13.6 million, but then we have a 5% contingency, which gets us to the 14.2, which is which I mentioned earlier. Next question. So that's the need for the project and the reason why. It's just enrollment. If we didn't do this project, we would have to worry about class sizes, where we're going to put these students, and we want to avoid getting into the 30s class sizes. We don't really want to put up portables as well. Portables are really supposed to be a temporary fix from a zoning standpoint, and unfortunately last time we had a portable at Kittley, it burned to the ground several years ago, for those people who remember that far back. But so the brick and mortar is the best way to go, and for the long term solution for the community. So with that, I'll turn it back to you.
Thank you, Fred. We will now hear from Baker Tilly Municipal Advisors LLC, our municipal advisor, about how the proposed project will be financed, as well as information about the effect on the typical property taxpayer. Brock.
Thank you, Mr. Smith, members of the board. Pleasure to be back here this evening talking about outstanding debt and how we can fit this project into our existing debt schedule. Before I jump into details of the project, I do want to mention that if any constituent has any interest in seeing some additional information related to the project, that is available through Mr. McWhorter. So many details we could provide as desired by any community member. So what you'll learn tonight is a reminder of what the existing debt looks like and some preliminary options on how we can fit this debt into the overall debt schedule as of today, and see that there will be no impact or no incremental increase impact to the taxpayer. For those who can see that tiny font, this is the raw information on what our debt looks like as of today. So we're paying on 9 securities in 2021, but you can see there we go from about a $28.2 million debt service budget to about 16.7. So we have a pretty substantial decrease as early as next budget year. This team knows, as well as any throughout the state of Indiana, that if you issue bonds in 2021, you don't start paying back until the next budget year. So that's why these can fit in really nicely right now with issuing in 2021 and start the repayment then in 2022. So for those who can't see that tiny font too well, I think we'll see in the coming graphs what the...
Good, the next slide there, Tyler. Right.
So for those who can't see the actual numbers too well, this is the same information, just provided graphically. For those visual learners. So again, we can see in 2021 how we peak right now. When you include all debt payments plus what is called increment, our total budget, about $28.2 million. Then as we have bonds maturing, like the GO bonds, and this being the last year of increment, down to $16.7 million. So again, a lot of options on how we can fit this proposed debt into our existing debt schedules. Next slide is summarizing three options for this community to consider as we sell these bonds. Press rewind really quickly though. We were here about this time last year when the $10 million bonds were approved, so right before COVID hit. So as we're working with your team now and selling those bonds here later this month, we don't want to forget about that project to fit it in what our existing debt looks like as of today. But the three scenarios we've built for your flexibility for this project is all of them have, you look at that last row, all of them are able to be fit into the existing debt with, again, no impact to taxpayers.
So we went over two of these at the work session, and we've added a third option as we move forward here.
Yep, yep. You'll see that in a little more detail in the coming slides. But all of them range from a 3-year, 1-month to a 6-year, 1-month repayment schedule. And all of them tonight that you'll see, and again next Monday, are we've built enough flexibility for the parameters that you can consider all three moving forward.
And they all three have different interest expenses, so but they all have different pros and cons, and we'll get you can see that when we get to the graphs.
So if you look at the interest expense, the reason why is the longer you repay something, the more interest you typically pay. However, there's, again, some trade-off between each three that we'll discuss here in the coming slides. I do want to point you in the direction of maximum annual payment. Is that is actual number you see in the resolution that will be considered for next meeting. And you can see that $8.653 million amount. That is not what's being increased, but rather as debt is maturing, how we're fitting in that approximate $8.6 million proposed payment in the coming years that, again, fits within the existing debt with no increase or no added burden to taxpayers. Different maximum annual tax rate depending upon the different projects, which we'll see in a little more detail here shortly. When you look at all of the projects together and you consider the different three, only one of them increases from where we were paying in 2020. But again, I want to emphasize in none of the three options does it have an increase compared to the existing debt in 2021. So again, trying to establish a lot of flexibility in it though. No matter which option we choose, there will be no added increased burden to the taxpayers. So the first one, as we go back and we jump to the next slide. Thank you. The gray, the dark gray or the black is the outstanding debt that you've previously seen on the third slide. The orange bars, that 2-year repayment, represents that $10 million that was approved last March that we're getting ready to sell.
For the junior high project.
Then the light blue represents the first option that this board has previously seen. So again, we're fitting it in over a 4-year budget repayment, and we're keeping it within our 2020 debt service budget. So again, a nice option to consider as we work with Dr. Hibbard and Mr. McWhorter. As we monitor net assessed value and the interest rates, those will be two of the trigger points on which repayment schedule is best for Franklin Township at the date of the sale. So that's option one on how it fits within not only the 2020 budget, but the 2021, as you see that spike. The next slide represents the second option that this team has seen as well. And again, the dark gray or the black is the outstanding debt as of today. The orange bars are the $10 million junior high bonds. Then again, the light blue represents the 3-year repayment, 3-year budget repayment for option two. And again, we're keeping these payments within that 2021 debt budget. So again, we'll start seeing some decrease from our peak in 2022. So we start seeing that decrease in 2023 and budget year 2024. Now for the last option that this team has previously not seen, but again, give a nice fit into it as well. As you saw in the prior slides, 2 years of dip in 2026 and 2027 before we have an increase in 2028. So this third option is, again, we're fitting it within the 2020 and 2021 debt service budgets. However, we're extending the payment out a little bit in order to fill in those 2 years in 2026 and 2027. The reason for this third option is interest rates are really low, and rather than letting our debt fall to a point where we can't fill it in later years, we're giving this option to, again, fill it in with really low interest rates based upon the current environment to let us gradually fall and have that and keep that waterfall effect with your outstanding debt. So this is option three that is enabled with these resolutions. We can sell it with this option. But again, all options at this point is we'll continue to monitor net assessed value and the interest rates leading up to the sale. With that, I welcome questions or comments.
None. Thank you, Brock. At this point, we will now open the public hearing. Remember, if you'd like to speak, to please come to the podium. State your name, your address, and limit your comments to the proposed project and financing. Keep any comments to 3 minutes. Avoid being repetitive if possible. No one in the public to speak tonight. You'll have another opportunity next week at our board meeting if you'd like to come and speak about the project. Thanks to all of our professional partners who have come to participate in the hearing tonight, and thank you to Mr. McCorder. We appreciate your time and interest in the project and the future of our community. Please note that this is just the first step in the legal process. No board action is legally required at this hearing. Rather, this hearing is solely to hear public comment. The board will continue to work with the administration and its professional partners to look for efficiencies to conserve tax dollars while meeting our educational needs. The board will hold a second public hearing in this boardroom on next Monday, March 15th, 2021 at 6 p.m. And with that, the first preliminary determination hearing is closed. The final item tonight on our special board meeting agenda is just a discussion about the CARES Act grant money that we received in the initial CARES Act, and then at the end of the calendar year in the supplemental appropriation from Congress. And with that, I will turn it over to Mr. McCorder.
Thank you. So it's kind of ironic. I had some emails going back and forth. So the Congress just approved $1.9 trillion third stimulus package. But ironically, we still haven't received the second stimulus package. We know what our allocation is. Our allocation is $3.2 million, $3,206,926.93. We'll get into that here in a second. We actually have a Zoom call scheduled, I think, March 17th to get more information on all that. So what you have there in front of you is kind of a preliminary draft of what we've been looking at as a team of what we need to do. As we talk about individual things here, various people will talk about it. We have a couple different things. We have a lot of different software items that we need to address. Mastery Connect, which we'll get into in a second, Google Classroom, Skyward Student Information Systems, what SIS stands for. Also looking at summer school busing, some unreimbursed summer school costs, because we turn that into DUE, but a lot of that's not reimbursed, so it would cover those extra costs. Counseling mental health issues, we're looking at that as well. COVID salary reimbursements. So if you remember from the first stimulus package, we got the whole grant, I believe, was like $885,000-ish, right around that. We had to share a portion of that with our non-public schools, so our portion was right around $800,000. We used essentially all of that for salary reimbursements to keep our classified staff employed during the pandemic.
Sure, just to stop you, you said that we had to give it to Title I non-public, and the only Title I non-public is Nativity, correct?
Correct. It's the money, the way it's distributed is based on the Title I distribution formula, and since we only distribute to elementary, I believe Nativity was the only school that, even though Lutheran's in their high school, but they weren't eligible. Correct. So this time around, a bunch of people complained. And so they have them separate. And so the second round, we don't have to share this allocation with the non-publics. I'm not really sure how they're handling that.
They have their own pot of money.
They have their own separate pot of money, yeah. And then as far as the third round that just got passed, we don't have any information on what that will be. But to put it in perspective before we kind of get into the details, it's the Title I distribution allocation. It has its problems. For example, our allocation is $3.2 million, which we're very thankful for. But, say, for example, Indianapolis Public Schools, their allocation is $79 million. Okay. So we have roughly 10,500 students. We're less than three times the size of IPS. I think they have 26,000. But they're getting 25 times more money. And so I understand and fully understand and acknowledge that they have more at-risk students than we do, and it costs more to educate more at-risk students, but not an opinion that it's 25 times more. So, but with that, we need to deal with what the allocation that we have. And so, COVID salary reimbursements, we have $973,000 kind of in this draft here. We also have another $567,000 down at the bottom of, of that page there that we could also reimburse ourselves for. Either whether we do it in the second round or if we wait and do it in the third round. But what we, what I was trying to do is, and the indirect cost is for running the grant, and then I have an Acton HVAC heating project in here, $1.4 million. So I wanted to get that whole project in there. That's why I didn't reimburse the whole salary reimbursement that we could. This is fluid. If we need to increase something a little bit or decrease something a little, we can. Wanted people to talk about the Mastery Connect, for example. Chase, if you want to talk about what that program's for. And
be utilizing this every grade?
Every grade.
Okay.
And it's on, the kids can take the assessment on Chromebook, grade it, and then all of it's dumped data sheets that our teachers can use.
So we've been doing a nice job with the data, but Haley's amazing with Excel spreadsheets, but it was requiring our teachers to input data in a spreadsheet, and this eliminates that piece for teachers.
So what we're looking for at, with these monies, we realize this is one-time money. It's not going to be a continual annual everything. So we want to look at things that, hey, where can we get the best bang for a buck as far as helping us now and in the future, but not have a reoccurring cost necessarily associated with it. So a lot of these computer program purchases, we'll do that to where we can get it in, get it installed, get training on it, and then later on prices will drop because the annual renewals are a lot less than the initial. So, Tyler, you want to talk about Google Classroom and Skyward? And Skyward is something we've actually been looking at for a couple years now. This just gives us an opportunity to actually implement it now, whereas because it's such a high-dollar item. And so without this grant, it would be really problematic for us to actually
really, there seems to be a significant cost to that.
Yes, yeah, it's $330,000.
Yeah. Well, and I'll start there, and we'll talk about Skyward first. So, you know, we've looked it's probably been about a year and a half since we did a live demo. We were very impressed with what they had to offer. But then when I got an official quote back, it was just the amount that it would cost to implement the first year. I mean, you see the number there was astronomical.
Currently, we use Infinite Campus.
Right, okay. Right. But looking at post-implementation, its annual cost is actually lower than Infinite Campus that we use currently. So as a comparison, Infinite Campus, we currently pay them $112,000 annually, and the annual payment for Skyward is going to be just under $50,000.
Large upfront cost, less
large upfront cost, annual. Much smaller annual operating costs. And the rub, what really made us look hard at this is looking to Canvas, and especially Mastery Connect, and Google, when we start to talk about that, we need the ability for those platforms to sync from our existing SIS or whatever SIS we are using. And not only that, but those grades to be able to pass back into those official grade books. So we have the syncing to Canvas as we have today and could sync into Mastery Connect, but we cannot get that data back into Infinite Campus without an additional fee. So when we started looking at those fees, we found that the additional fee to add that functionality was just going to send that annual cost way over the edge, which made us take another look at Skyward. You gotta pull them up side by side and scroll and type and scroll and type, and it, it can be a nightmare with large classes.
One of the other things problematic with Infinite Campus is we're the largest user in the state of Indiana. So for us to get something designed, form designed at Impact State Reports, we have to pay for it because Skyward, we won't be the
ongoing support issues. You know, the state has a new initiative where they want all the data reporting to be in real time. Typically, the way we do it is we have to export files, review them for accuracy, and upload them to the state. Well, now they want to be able to pull those as needed. And that's required a lot of these companies to go through the process of adding that feature set. But they did it based on a standard, so a lot of these platforms already have that integration. So Skyward was one of the first ones to say we're ready to go. They just had to make minor tweaks to be compatible with Indiana's slight skew of that platform. But Infinite Campus is still buried in that development process. And, you know, it's a it's kind of a two-sided coin that they're looking at us as an example, using our data to test this with. But at the same time, that, I mean, that means that they're when it's all said and done, you know, it's like we're kind of the model for it, but we don't have the we don't have any of our peers that we can lean on to say, well, how are you guys doing this? Because the other districts in the state, of which there's only a small handful, are so much smaller than we are, so they don't operate the way we do. So we're kind of on our own for support for something that's probably core to our daily operations here.
Google.
Google recently, only a couple of weeks ago, announced changes to their licensing model. So we're currently on a free tier, which has been around since it seems like the beginning of time. They released probably about 2 or 3 years ago what they called Enterprise, which added some additional features, but it was really more for commercial customers and not necessarily education. But this last year, they really invested heavily into education. So they've come out with a licensing model for education at $5 a student a year, which includes 4 staff licenses for every student license, which is well above what we need, so we've got no issues there. But some of the things that they do is they've added a bunch of enhancements and features specific to education that you can only get on this paid pricing model. Some of those features are originality reports, so you can take submitted work and compare them against each other, as well as known databases of copyrighted works where you can kind of make sure that students aren't cheating and are submitting original works. They'll add third-party add-ons to Google Classroom, which will allow things like any of our textbook adoptions, a lot of the online resources that they come with will have software that will tie directly into Google Classroom. The more that you can tie into that, the easier it is for our kids because they don't ever have to leave that online classroom, that virtual classroom, to access those resources. Google Meet, which is really starting to come into its own and kind of compete with Zoom and WebEx and the other video conferencing apps out there. They're adding a ton of features specific to education where you can do polls, Q&As, quizzes, you can do breakout rooms, as well as take attendance. Classroom, they're going to add logging and analytics. So as it stands today, we can't really see what a student is doing inside of Google Classroom. For example, Canvas, I can see when a student logs in every page that they view inside of Canvas. So when a kid says, hey, I took the test, but it didn't record it, we can pull it up and see, well, no, it didn't even show you logging in today. We don't have that ability in Google Classroom. We will have that ability now. They have the sync in the gradebook that I mentioned. So Google Classroom does not have that ability to sync or send grades back into our SIS, but with this upgrade, we'll have that ability. Additionally, the Security Center, which is a new tool that allows us to do advanced threat monitoring, protection, and remediation across every app in G Suite, which will allow us to kind of keep a handle on district security, email, docs, help check to make sure that we're protected, help prevent against malware and other cyber attacks.
Okay.
So again, these are just placeholder dollar amounts until we get things finalized, and we think that we will end up submitting the grant probably later part of March, early April. If I had a guess, we get final information. The next couple items: summer school busing, unreimbursed summer school cost. We're still looking and analyzing that. Those are kind of just placeholder dollar amounts because we know that we will be having summer school. The question with the curriculum team is, you know, how expansive that will be. I don't know if you want to add anything to that, or we're still investigating it really at this point. So we'll be doing iRead, I'm sure, again, and high school.
Typically, in a normal year, what would our summer school attendance look like, Tony and Chase?
At the high school?
Or just K-12?
So we're thinking having the dollars available for the busing will substantially encourage kids to, or parents to send their kids, especially for those who need to, you know, help get caught up. Counseling, mental health, again, I got $250,000 sitting there, kind of a placeholder to add additional counseling position. I know as a district we're looking at it, really the whole program. Determining how we want to have it structured as we move forward. So we've looked at a lot of different, we've looked at a lot of comparative data from other districts. We've looked at other districts, you know, what we currently spend compared to other districts, which is on par, but this will definitely help us the immediate need right at the moment here.
So would this be potentially like a contract, or would this be actually adding FTEs, or
I think initially this would be adding FTE. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. So we are, and Sharon can maybe comment. We already added, we had Adult and Child, for example, and then we added Hamilton Center. And so, Hamilton Center has actually been expanding. In fact, they're going to add two more technicians and two more caseworkers and a technician at the high school. Yeah. So that would be for another counseling position, but they're still working. I know Dr. Hattori is still working with the high school on how that position will look going forward. Depending on, there may be money for social worker or additional services for a social worker, so it may not 100% be salaries, but it could be a combination of both. And, but until we get that finalized, we won't know exactly. The COVID salary reimbursements is just that. Those are salaries that we have paid out to keep people employed. And or if you recall, Jill can help on this, they changed the leave policy to where they allowed made employers mandatory you had to give so many sick days. And then there was actually some people, if they had to care for their child, they could just take leave off and get paid 2/3 pay. So some of those dollars is what's included in that. That expired December 31st. So we've incurred $973,000 plus of the $567,000 down below, about $300,000 of that is PPE that we haven't been reimbursed for by FEMA. So we've applied for FEMA, but I seriously doubt we'll see any of that. This is an opportunity for us to get reimbursed for those expenses that we've incurred. Indirect cost, it's 1.05% of the grant, which we are allowed to run the grant. And then Acton HVAC, and I know Jody and Rick are out in the audience. And so one of the big things that as they've talked about these stimulus dollars, and even this third round of stimulus dollars, they talked about air quality and, how schools in general across the country, have these facility needs that have gone gone without for several years. And so we've done a decent job of trying to maintain, keep up with things. But I wanted these grants all have sunset periods where you get the money, but you have only so much time to spend them. And I don't honestly don't know what the end date on this grant is because we haven't got the finalized information, but usually it's like a year and a half to 2 years. Well, so we got with Jody Rip was a few months back, and he's like, hey, this is coming. Let's get some shovel-ready projects ready just in case it does come. And so we actually have Acton ready to go, and we have Bunker Hill ready to go, and we can come up with a few more. But for now, with the dollars that we have, we thought Acton would be the priority. It's the older building. It's the most one in need. We actually did some air sampling, actually in all of our buildings here this last month, and they all tested all within the ranges that they need to be. And so this is a way for us to get on our facility book, kind of get that up and catch that up and still meet the grant parameters. Any questions, comments, concerns, or
questions from the board?
So for the salary costs, can we at some point get the overage of what we would have spent, if there is any, and there may not, due to COVID? So for some staff, we went ahead and paid them, but they didn't have to work. For some of those staff, they took time off to either care for their families.
That's what this is.
Mm-hmm. So are you saying for those, that is the overage?
That is the overage. The $800,000 we paid on the round one plus this $973,000, that's the amount of money that we paid for people to stay home during COVID or we can get the child care leave one out. There wasn't very many people.
Okay, so but let me clarify, because if they were on salary, even if we normally wouldn't have paid them to stay home, but their salary was budgeted for.
Right.
That's not
included in this number.
Okay. So we but
this is all hourly employees. Most of it's hourly employees with the exception of the leave days, which could be some salaried people.
Okay, so there's a cafeteria staff. The school is, yeah. And I know some cafeteria staff work, but so this is hypothetical.
Yeah, so on the first round, I gave you guys a breakdown of, you know, this one, the elementary staff, secondary, middle school staff, high school staff, custodial staff, transportation staff. We'll get a breakdown of each area for you.
So it really did cost us over $1 million to support the 900, and isn't there some at the bottom, and then some additional COVID salary and PPE, so 973.
Plus another 260 on top of that, yeah. So yeah. 300 of that 567 is PPE, yeah. Plus the 800,000 from round one.
Yeah. Okay.
But, again, we also still...
You don't have your little your calculator right here.
We still, which we were also still fortunate, we still finished our budget in the black, too. So, I mean, a lot of schools across the country didn't do that, but we were able to.
Right. And I'm not making judgment. I'm just running numbers in my head.
Yeah.
The other thing is, and I realize that you want to keep some of these costs as one-time costs because this is one-time money. And we know that students... Some students are thriving and they're doing fine, and other students are not thriving. They are struggling and maybe have fallen a little bit behind.
Right.
I mean, we know that. Are there things that, like the, I think it was the Mastery Connect, where we've identified, or Tony has identified, yes, this is going to collect it, great data for us to make that next. But is there also projects or activities that then can implement that data to go and directly start helping students
right.
to get that next connection to get them hopefully back up to par?
Yeah, so
we have summer school.
So
in
these
here,
are, like great. I said, these are fluid dollar amounts. Mm-hmm. So as things like that are identified, that 973 amount it will be reduced,
okay.
And other things will flow to other areas.
Because for me, I would love to see some of this go to students or impact students directly. yes, clean air, HVAC. I'm all for clean air. Do not get me wrong. But I know we have students out there who are struggling, and if we can get them more confident to enter next year, it's going to help both our students and our teachers.
Again,
if we can do things to help our teachers, that's wonderful too. I'm not criticizing.
I don't disagree.
So the plan will be, and there will be, we'll be hard pressed to do that work this summer, the acceleration or intervention. Not sure how many parents and staff members we're going to have to sign up to wear a mask. Vaccination goes, and if we get to start next year normal, Tony and Chase will be working with our building level people to build in intervention time or acceleration time, in which it built time because we have the system set up that our teachers will know where our kids are, and they'll be able to fill in the holes of their learning to accelerate them.
It
really comes down to more time and support, and I really believe that'll start to happen next year.
If it's not part of this round two, it'll definitely be part of round three.
I was going
to
say.
Which will allow us to do some intercession stuff. If we find those gaps and we want to get a grant to basic teachers. Okay.
But we'll be fighting for that with everybody else, correct?
It's my understanding that the only way we would get that money is if we will have spent all of our stimulus money. So as we get more money next time, you will have had to spend all that before you'll get any of the state money.
Okay.
So the state money is really going to be for non-high poverty schools that don't get much title and won't get much stimulus, they'll be in the state money. Next time, I think we're going to get more than $3.2 million, and so for intervention acceleration.
So it also sounds like you might have some more construction, Bunker Hill potentially as well, for us to talk about.
You know, we have our facility book that outlines every building. Yeah. So. And a lot of, there's HVAC issues associated with most of them.
Okay. Any other questions for the whole team? This has been very, very, very helpful and informative. I appreciate all the work that went into this.
Yeah, and I appreciate hearing where the CARES Act money is going. Thank you.
Well, seeing no more questions, this special board meeting is adjourned at 6:53.